Rachel, thank you so much for agreeing to add your voice to the College of William & Mary Hip Hop Collection.
Thank you. Thank you for including me. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. So, to get things started, would you mind just sort of introducing yourself? Oh, hello?
Hello?
Oh, sorry. To get things started, would you mind introducing yourself?
Oh, sure. I didn't hear what you said. My name is Rachel Font, and I have worked in the entertainment/music community in Hampton Roads, Virginia for over 10 years now.
Okay. Are you a lifelong Virginian?
I've actually been here since the age of 12, so although I'm from Maryland, Virginia is pretty much my home state.
Okay, so did you grow up in Norfolk or Hampton or?
I grew up in Suffolk.
Oh, Suffolk, okay.
I grew up in Suffolk, yes.
Okay, so actually, want to kind of take it this way, if you wouldn't mind. Tell me a little bit about what it was like growing up in Suffolk.
Suffolk was definitely interesting. It was like its own world. I never even discovered Portsmouth until I was like 17 or 18. we traveled a lot, you know, but so obviously Suffolk was my home base, but I grew up on a lake in Suffolk and made friends and went to school there, went to private school, and most of my friends went to public school, though, there, and it was a great place to grow up, really. Mm-hmm.
What was your exposure like to hip-hop and hip-hop culture growing up in Suffolk?
Honestly, hip-hop didn't really enter my life until I was about 17 years old, to be honest with you. I was more of pop. Mm-hmm. I listened to a lot of pop. I listened to, like, the Madonnas and, New Kids on the Block, and I listened to rock and, you know, back then Poison and, you know, different groups like that.
Mm-hmm.
So hip-hop wasn't really part of that until, like I said, I reached about 17, 18 years old.
Well, what caused the switch? What got you interested in hip-hop?
I think just, you know, branching out and discovering new things and the Buddha Brothers on 23 Jam, I really liked their music a lot. I liked the mixes that DJ Law had. I purchased one of their, like, mixtapes from DJs in Portsmouth, and I have friends that listen to, you know, like Wu-Tang and De La Soul and different groups like that, the Fugees. And it really kind of opened my eyes to all the other different types of music and possibilities, and I just really was, you know, gravitated towards that style of music.
Right, right. Okay, so in terms of your first memory then, what was your first memory of hip-hop?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. Nobody's ever asked me that. That's hilarious. My first memories. Probably working at Harbor Park with some of my friends from Norfolk and listening to hip hop music.
Mm-hmm.
Really,
mm-hmm.
I guess that was like something I looked forward to, like, you know, riding around with them and listening to, you know, again, Fugees and Wu Tang and, you know, Nas,
right,
and Jay-Z and Jay-Z and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I was working at Harbor Park in downtown Norfolk.
Okay. So, I mean, it sounds like that through both the radio and the Buddha Brothers, but then also friends of yours, I mean, that's really sort of how you discovered hip-hop, you came to really like hip-hop.
Yeah. Oh, and I did leave out something that I probably shouldn't have, which was Jams Fest. My first Jams Fest was when Vicky came. And I'll never forget that he had confetti and clowns and all these people on stage and his performance. And I'll never forget that ever because it was the first and only time I ever saw him at Vicky.
Okay. Interesting. So, well, would you mind telling me, describing what Jams Fest was?
Jams Fest was a concert with so many different types of hip hop and R&B artists on one bill. Mm-hmm. Like a small urban version of maybe a Lollapalooza one day, one night type thing, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
That Orange Tree Jams did. And I mean, they literally would have Jay-Z and Missy and the AZs, everybody, you would have 10 acts, back to back. And they completely sold out the Coliseum every time. I remember the first one I went to, and there were people lined up around the sides because they were I don't know how they got in, but I just remember it being over capacity and people lined around the side standing and people in the ushers kept trying to get them to go and sit down or leave, and everybody was just so into the show, they just gave up. It was crazy. It was just so many people. So that was my first real, hip hop concert.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
so Biggie came.
Yeah, it was really exciting. And like I said, that was when I saw Biggie, and it was just, it was amazing.
Oh, wow. So, and we're talking, what are we talking, 94?
I think it was 94. It was either 94 or 95.
Okay. And you said it was thrown by 103 Jams?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Okay, so, yeah, I'm glad you remember that.
Yeah, I'll never forget that. I still talk about that whenever people bring up Biggie, because, of course, that's a topic that comes up all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I still, mention that as a memory that I have.
And so, he had clowns on his show. I don't.
Yeah, it was he came out into a party atmosphere.
Okay.
And it was confetti and balloons and clowns and then he performed. It was just this grand finale type thing.
Oh wow, that's wild. Yeah, that's great. We see that in terms of your friends and everything. Was anyone in your family interested in hip hop or listening to hip hop?
Yes, I had a cousin who grew up in West Virginia on a fruit orchard, and he became obsessed. Unlikely person. I mean, his family was anything but colorful. He was obsessed with Tupac, and he was like, "Yeah, I listen to Tupac." And he was a couple years younger than me. And I mean, of course, I knew who Tupac was, and I listened. But I mean, you really have to listen. All he would listen to was Tupac CDs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that kind of put me, onto another platform again, because Tupac was so in depth with his content,
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
What he contributed to hip hop.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But my brother also. Ironically, was in a studio in Norfolk with some friends, hanging out with a rapper, as he's described it, which is one of my favorite stories. He's like, "There's a rapper from New York, this big black guy. He's really good. I don't know who he is." I said, "Well, what's his name?" Because I, of course, knew, who a lot of the rappers were.
Right.
And he said, "Oh, his name was Biggie Smalls or something." And I was
"No way."
Oh, my God. I was like, "You're an idiot." So then he did his research and he realized who it was. He was just dumbfounded, and he just from that point on was a huge Biggie fan. And that's what turned him into a hip hop fan, was his experience with Biggie in the studio. And he did not really know on what level how big that was. You know what I mean? That turned him into, that's when he fell in love with hip hop. So yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely in my family.
Oh my God, that's so wild that your family has this Biggie connection.
I know, it's crazy. My brother, he was like, "I think his name was Biggie Smalls or something like that." And then so I was like, "You have got to be kidding me. You're an idiot. How did you not know that?" But he still laughed about it.
Oh yeah, that's, I mean, that
people find that hard to believe. He was 17, 18 years old, so he was discovering,
Yeah, that's great. So what he was hanging out like what studio? I mean, was it where? I mean, I'm just trying to place like where your brother was hanging out, and then how.
He was at a studio in Norfolk.
Okay, so just happened to be
with a friend who ran his studio, and he didn't know who he was. He was just hanging out. He had no clue.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he came out, I was like, yeah, I met this really cool rapper from New York. And, you know, as I asked more questions, and then, you know, when I said, well, what was his name? He's like, oh, I think his name was like Biggie Smalls or something like that. And I was like, oh, God.
Yeah,
that heart attack. I was like, are you so scratched right now? I mean, that was like when he was really, like, breaking radio. You know what I mean? When people really obviously knew who he was. I mean, his career was obviously short-lived, so.
Right. Okay, so, now walk me through from, you know, the time where you're 17 and 18, from becoming a fan and interested in hip-hop and, you know, digging it to actually working and, you know, being part of the sort of music, hip-hop, and culture and industry.
Sure, in my 20s, I went from a TV job to radio promotion, and one of my first meetings there on my first day was with DJ Law,
mm-hmm.
and I was just totally in awe because I, like I said, was a huge Blue Brothers fan for quite a few years, and so to sit down with him and then find out that I was going to work with him, you know, one-on-one as one of his promotions team, I was just so excited. And when I told him that I had the old blue cassette tape mixtape, they only released two apparently,
mm-hmm.
That I bought at DJ's in Portsmouth, he just thought that was hilarious. And from that, you know, from that day on, we just had a great relationship. And when my mom came there, she called them the Booty Brothers, and so we used to have a joke about that because and I was so embarrassed, but he thought it was so funny. Like, it didn't offend him at all.
Because
obviously other people had called them other things, but my mother, you know, it was so embarrassing. So that was just a long-standing joke when we would call them the Booty Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
So I just instantly fell in love with my job. It was an awesome job. How could you go wrong? I mean, to get paid, to go to concerts, to go to movies, to meet celebrities, you know, do everything.
Right.
So, I mean, how can that, and then to work with people that you've listened to on the radio all this time, you know, it was just a wonderful experience. And then as I was working there, then people started coming up to me and handing me their music.
Mm-hmm.
And when I initially started, I was doing promotions for 92.1 The Beat. DJ Law was, of course, on 103 Jams, but he was the music director for 92.1 The Beat as well, which was a strictly hip-hop station. And he was always telling me about, you know, like the local music scene and artists and, you know, what to look for and who was popular. And then he just started coming up to me a lot and asking me about how to get on the radio and what to do. And then it just turned into a passion because I saw the passion in what they were doing, and I wanted to help them. So whenever I could help them, I would, because there's a lot of people in the music industry that just walk away from you because they're like, oh, everybody wants to be a rapper. Everybody wants to be a singer. Who are you? Why are you better?
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of hard for anybody to break through when people are always shoving them away, like, leave me alone, I don't have time for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, who am I to be in this position to know the answers to their questions and not answer them? Like, everybody has resources for a reason. Why can't I help them in some capacity? I might not be able to get them on the radio, but I can at least start helping them, you know, prepare what they need to do to get their music out there the right way.
Mm-hmm,
and it just
mm-hmm.
turned into that, and then I started, you know, helping people, consulting people, wrote some blogs, used a blog on MySpace all the time,
mm-hmm.
and I used to get a really good response from it, and I was like, oh, okay. Then I got brave one day, once I got promoted to 103 Jams about 4 years in, 3 years in, I'm sorry, at the radio station doing promotions for 103 Jams, which was a big task, and I mean, you know, it's one of the biggest radio stations in the market, and, you know, it's well known in the state and around the country,
mm-hmm.
Because of people like the Hooter Brothers and DJB and, you know, Chris Caliente and different radio personalities before them, and So I decided to ask a promoter to let me have an audition for a concert they were having at the Hampton Coliseum. And because I was hearing more and more complaints from artists that promoters were charging them to perform, and you'd see them go out on stage and perform, and then people would know who they were, so they really weren't responsive, and I just felt bad for them, because I'm one of those really compassionate people. And I said, well, let me try something different. So we did, we had the auditions at a club in Virginia Beach, and the line was wrapped around the building. It was crazy. It was like one of the highlights of my radio career that I still talk about and reminisce about, because it helped open the door for artists and being able to perform from in our area anyway, for national acts. We had to cut the line short. We allowed almost 100 people to audition, 100 rappers and groups to audition, and then we chose 4 people who we had for the concert. It was called the Southern Hustling Tour. It had people like Rick Ross and Trey Songz and J. Cole and, oh my gosh, like, Blue Boozy and a bunch of other people. It was like a big lineup. And the place was, they were expecting 7,000 for the concert. It turned out to be 1,000. But it was the most exciting moment to see an artist, like we had XXL, Kenny, and some other people, go in front of that audience and get an applause and be excited, because we had DJ Jack Spade. He created drops. Like, we made a production. It had drops for them, introduced them, did the whole bit, you know, made it exciting, not just threw them on the stage so nobody knew who they were. Like, we actually made it a production. And to see the response that they got was just so awesome. It gave me chills, and like, it just started a whole new movement, and DJ Law was so excited about it that we continued to do it whenever we got the opportunity with the promoters. They would allow us to do these auditions, and then to this day, they still do that kind of stuff, you know, and DJ Law is obviously no longer here, but I think he'd be proud to know that we opened a door for artists, because he always wanted to help artists and create bigger opportunities for them so that people couldn't take advantage of them. So that's why I have such a great relationship with a lot of the artists, the hip-hop artists. And I mean, some guys that you would think that I would never even talk to, people see me talk to them in the street, and they're like, wow, you know this person, you know that person? Like, you know, they're hardcore. And I'm like, that's cool. I have nothing to do with the music and the relationship that we have. Like, respect is respect. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's how it is when you're dealing with real artists and real talent.
Yeah, you know, so, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, it sort of, mine goes back to what you said a little bit before in terms of, you know, getting counsel or getting advice and some from DJ Law about, like, how to spot talent. I mean, what are some of the, I mean, like, what do you look for?
It's really the passion. You can see the passion in their eyes. You can hear it in their voice. You can hear it in their talent. Even just their presentation, like, they just love it. They live it and they breathe it. It's one of those things that they, you walk, talk the talk, you know, it's everything. It's the look, the sound, everything. You just, you know, until you walk up to you and you just have that chemistry with somebody about something, you just know that that's what they're in it for. Like, you know, there's a difference. I say there's 3 types of hip-hop artists now. And I specifically say hip-hop because of how much the culture has changed. I mean, different genres of music have changed anyway, but I guess since I'm so immersed in that more than anything. You have your fly-by-night, you know, one-hit wonders. Their record labels do a lot now of one album, boom, you're going out the door, next one, you know what I mean? And you've got your commercial who turn into moguls. You got your Jay-Z's, your, you know, your T's, your people like that that turn it into other ventures. And then you have your longevity non-commercial artists like your Nas, your Common, you know, your Most Deaf, your people like that. So I think that when you're talking to them, I think you can get an idea of what type of artist they are and what they gravitate towards, which helps me, you know, decide if that's somebody that I want to work with. Because if you don't have passion, then I can't have the passion for you. These people come to me and they want me to hand it to them on the silver platter sometimes, and I say, you know what, this is your career. I'm not going to be more excited for your career than you.
Right, right.
I need to see why this is important to you. Because I'm one of those people, when I jump into a project, I jump into it, like, full speed ahead. Mm-hmm. So then sometimes you have to put the brakes on yourself when you're that type of person, when you're passionate like that. You have to say, whoa, let me see what they're going to do first, because this is their career, not mine.
Right.
Yeah, it's really about the passion. It's really about the passion and the presentation and the way they, you know, deliver it to me. I mean, I can't expect somebody to come up to me and be like the perfect salesman, but it's something, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So it comes down to being able to respond and read people almost.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, there's a lot of people, a lot of good sales pitches out there. Some of the worst rappers have the best sales pitches ever, and some of the best rappers have the worst sales pitches. So it's like the opposite of everything. It's crazy.
Right.
The ones with all the money, I've noticed that a lot of the ones with the money are the ones that are actually worse. The ones with the really good talent, they're broke.
Right.
They're broke. That's why I've done so much gratis work, because I'm like, hey, I can't let this slip by. I just have to deal with the budget later. Because that's just what it is. Like, I want to be passionate about who I am and what I represent as well. And working with artists, then I say, okay, well, hey, listen, he doesn't have a huge budget. He might not have any budget right now, but hey, let me help get him to at least one next step, and then, you know, see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And what usually happens is when I do that with particular, you know, specific artists, they will come back to me when they do have money, and then I'm like the first person they want to spend it with, because I invested in them when they didn't have the resources that they needed.
Right.
How does anybody, because my thing is with the record labels now, they have A&Rs, but not like they used to. Like, what happened to artists in development? Like, what happened to that? Why do you have to be packaged now? Why don't they want to invest the time and energy into the artist? Why do they want to keep putting out these one album artists and then drop them, moving on to the next one? Why not create that longevity?
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the dollars now.
Yeah.
For them, it's not about necessarily the music, because some of these rappers that are commercial rappers who are out here making millions, you're like, God, there's a guy that I know right here locally who's never signed a deal for anything. He would kill that guy in a freestyle, you know? So it's really interesting to see what they find marketable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if you wouldn't mind just sort of breaking down like what you do with a rapper or a client. I mean, what exactly is it?
I provide marketing services, publicity, promotion. So that is everything from writing press releases to writing bios to putting together imaging, branding campaigns, everything from a slogan to a logo.
Mm-hmm.
To putting together community relations, developing their media relationships, setting up, you know, potential interviews, also looking for other ways to collaborate with other artists, opportunities as far as concerts and events, festivals, things that might make sense, maybe music panels, and sending out the press releases and putting together email blasts and consulting with websites, their social media, a little bit of everything, really.
Yeah.
All of the marketing, PR, and promotions aspects of it. You know, even helping them with preparing for interviews.
Mm-hmm.
I have different people that I can refer to help them, because some of them just not sure, like, how to answer. I mean, I'm not an expert at it by any means, but it's different with me as opposed to somebody else. I can look at them and say, okay, well, maybe we should tweak this. Maybe we should focus on this a little bit more. But to kind of help them develop their interview skills a little bit more.
Right. So, I'm curious about, is there a way of, in terms of doing what you're doing and helping folks with their image and branding, that it's a particular set of skills that are specific to the hip-hop field versus, like, country or rock or something like that? Or
I don't
R&B?
Think so. No, I don't think so. I think that I could probably do it with St. John, and I work with other types of artists, too. I think it's really just about knowing your artist and knowing where it makes sense, the placement of it. You know, obviously, from the interview opportunities, the magazines, the media, to the community events, community relations, a little bit of everything. I don't think so, not at all.
It's
really just, It's basically having a good product and knowing how to market it. Yeah.
Well, but is there a way? I guess another way to think about it that I'm curious about is there a way that you have to think about packaging hip hop differently than you would package other stuff?
You have to know what area they want to cover. You have to know whether they want to be commercial, whether they want to be true to the hip hop community.
Right.
If they want to cross over, if you notice a lot of the hip hop artists now, they cross over because that's where the money is.
Right.
They know the reality is the people that buy the albums are more on the top line.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, yeah, in that sense, yes, there is a little bit of a difference in how you package it.
Okay, so
based on what their target is.
Okay. So yeah, and that it will come from you getting to know them and trying to figure out what they envision for themselves, what they
their
want
goals.
For their career.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
What their goals are, do they have target audience? Do they want to be an artist, turn mogul? Do they want longevity?
Right.
Or they just in it for the fame? And the reality is, you have to ask this question: are you really just in it for the fame, the chicks, the money? Do you really care about this? Is this really your thing? Or do you think that, hey, I could be a good artist just so I could get out here and make this money? Because a lot of them are like that too, unfortunately. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that's not the same for, say, rock artists who might not want the same scenario, but you have to really ask that question, like, where are your intentions?
Right.
With this.
Okay, so I guess sort of I think it's a good part to ask you just sort of, we're going to jump tracks for a second, but I'm curious if you wouldn't mind, how would you define hip-hop?
Hip-hop is life stories. It's people's way of expressing what they've been through, where they're going. It's a different way of catching people's attention. I think it was intended initially for the urban audience, but obviously it has expanded in so many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just another style of music to express who you are as a person and develop your life story through your music.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, and so,
I mean, it's the DJ, it's the graffiti, it's the dancers, it's all those, the five elements, as they say.
So, within the sort of arc of your career so far, who are some of your influences? I mean, I know we've talked about DJ Law, but I'm curious about what other folks have influenced you.
I would have to say my boss in radio, who's been in radio for over 20 years, she has crafted some really good careers, and she's educated us in so many ways on, how this music thing works.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to say DJ B.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the most passionate people and talented DJs I've ever met in my life. Someone who I consider a little sister to me, who would be Sandy Russell.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She is so passionate about Virginia and hip-hop, and she has VA tattooed on her elbows. And although she says she looks up to me, I look up to her too, because she's just so excited, and she's so passionate, determined to help people
mm-hmm.
as much as she can. She will reach out to anybody and everybody to help them if they have a simple question or whatever it may be. She just wants you to keep working with the artist. She really wants you to stay connected in Virginia, because so many people, they leave, they mm-hmm. feel frustrated, and they think that people care when they really do.
Mm-hmm.
I work with Malice now, no Malice of the Clip, but I've worked with him for over 2 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And he is such an incredible person to see him make such leaps and bounds in his career and do something really drastic in changing his approach was huge of him. But people have embraced it really well. And the press loves him, and they always cover everything that he does. Like, they don't hesitate at all. Changing from talking about, drugs and money and chicks to, actually having some really good quality content about his religion and what it means to him. That's just been, you know, outstanding to watch me see him evolve. I helped him publish his book. And it's just an incredible experience. I just truly love that guy. I really do. He's awesome. There's simply people, I could probably name people all day. One is a really good friend of mine. His name is DJ Stress. I'm not sure if you've spoken to him, but he's definitely born and bred in Virginia, in Norfolk, went to Norfolk State. DJing parties since he was a teenager, and just really involved in the local music scene and putting together mixtapes for the artists, and really just cared about the artists and wanting to help them better their music and their careers by, you know, every opportunity trying to get them on 92.1 The Beat, or when he was on Hot 91, and he was an inspiration to watch. And one other really important person is Miss Blends. They kind of call her like the godmother of the music scene because she's dedicated so much time and energy to working with the artists one-on-one to help them develop their careers and put on award shows specifically for them, and also work with a lot of the youth to help them, you know, see where their talents lie and help them develop their talents even more. Even in the young hip-hop artists, the teenagers and the ones that are coming up in the music scene. So those are some of my main influences. In hip-hop.
You know, and well, and obviously, you know, you mentioned both men and women, but I'm curious about your experiences as a woman working in an industry and also a culture that traditionally has sort of slighted women, you know?
Yeah, it's been interesting, but I have to say that I had a fantastic mother growing up who helped me learn how to understand and approach people in a lot of ways. And I feel that things could be frustrating sometimes in dealing with, you know, all men. But for the most part, I developed a lot of really good relationships that I've held on to. And I've been away from radio for 4 years now, and I still have really good relationships with some of the people from the record labels. I think it's all about building relationships. I mean, you're never going to get along with everybody, but yeah, it's definitely a male-dominated industry. I had to become a little bit more aggressive, which my boss told me, obviously, that would happen. I was a white female. And an urban-dominated market, and, you know, I would walk into the club, and it would not necessarily be always the greatest scene, but I got respect because I was with the radio station, and people would, you know, come up to me and talk to me and literally ask me questions, who are you, why are you here, you know, stuff like that, and I was always very down-to-earth about it and open about what I was doing, and I think that's when people got to know me and see that I was there for the right intentions, and I was doing my job, and that I wasn't there to, you know, do anything but that.
Right.
I mean, I've had people walk up to me and say, "Are you the police?" And I would always laugh and say, "No, not quite."
Right.
I'm policing what my DJs are doing right now. That's about it.
Right.
But yeah, it's just, you know, it's really about pushing aside the stereotypes, and I mean, literally, when I first started and I was doing 92.1 The Beat, either the guys really liked me or they were looking at me like, what does this white girl know about hip-hop? Are you serious right now? Because they had been so, what's the word? I can't think of the right word to describe. Like, they had been hurt different times by different people because they were the little brother station of 103 Jams, and I guess they felt slighted sometimes. So it was my job pretty much to come in there and make them feel like, hey, you are important. Like, this doesn't matter. Like, you really are relevant to the whole movement and the hip-hop movement, especially since it was a strictly hip-hop station. So, go from there.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's good that sort of you're leading me nicely in terms of some of the stuff I want to talk about. So ended up with talk about exactly 92.1 The Beat, like what it was, what its mission was, how did it relate to like Hot 91 and 103 Jams, sort of lay that history and relationship out.
Well, the call letters were WBHH, we're Blazing Hip Hop. I came into it after it had already been on the air for, I think, a little over a year, maybe. The full life of the station, I want to say, was maybe 4 years, if that. But it was just one of those things where they started it with the right intentions to give the guys or the true hip hop heads that didn't want the commercial mixed in with it. They really wanted the more true hip hop music to have an outlet. That's really what it was. It was never really to compete with One in Three Jams, but, you know, that was the whole purpose, to really give real hip-hop heads what they wanted to hear. Mm-hmm. And then they would mix in some of the local flavor, like Miss Buns had the Production Room, which was a really popular show. It was dedicated to all local music. And then some of the other DJs, such as DJ Stress and Jack Spade and Rick G's, would also mix in local music. That's how they've usually been able to incorporate local music into radio. When they couldn't get actual spins with just a straight song, it would be in the mixes, and that's how a lot of people were able to build their fan base and build their buzz for their songs. But relying on the DJs to play their music in the mixes, in the mix shows that they had. And, you know, there were some changes at the top with management, and they came in and decided that they were going to cut the cord on that station and one other station, and they did. And people still talk about that station to this day. It was such a short span of time, kind of like when you're talking about like the Biggie career as far as the, you know, being known, and it, but it still had that impact. People still like, recently I saw somebody post a 92.1 The Beat t-shirt on Facebook. And every time I see anything with that kind of stuff, you know, it always brings back such fond memories.
Yeah. Okay, so that was around for 4 years, and then 103 Jams was new management, consolidated, whatever, jettisoned a couple stations. And so now in terms of radio stations in the area. Yeah, I mean it's 103 Jams, right? And what, 104, I guess, or 104.5?
Yeah. And then you have your straight hit pop stations. 105.3 and Hot 100.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I'm curious about, I mean, what are your thoughts about the radio industry and how it works and how to get music on or not, you know?
I think that, I'm still a huge advocate for radio. I mean, I think that they try to say that there's a, you know, obviously there's a smaller population of people that listen to radio because of all the other outlets, you know, obviously satellite, you know, iPods, different devices, you know, whatever it may be, but there's still people that love local radio that like to connect with their radio personalities. I remember some of the reps from New York used to come down here and say they never saw a local DJ that were so popular. They said that all the time when they would come down here from New York. They were just amazed by that. But I think radio still has a lot to offer. And as far as getting music played, it really just depends on the radio, the company that owns the radio station. Some of them it's a little bit easier than others, but it's also about developing relationships with DJs and the program directors.
Now, is there, is there a disconnect between the folks that are running the radio station and like, the DJs and the folks that are really invested in hip-hop culture? I mean, is that something that's still...
Hey, you're talking about corporations.
Yeah.
Their main goal is to make money. So, yeah, you've got contract negotiations that went bad with Michael Bazin, who's a huge syndicated radio show. And he was supposed to be ending his show with Cumulus Radio next Friday, and they locked him out of the studio. I mean, this just happened. He's a huge talk show host for syndicated, you know, with a syndicated show around the country.
Right.
So it's interesting. You know, it's, at the end of the day, it's about the almighty dollar.
Right.
And who's bringing us the money? And if they're not, then, you know, then they need to go. So, I mean, it's with any business. You know, obviously you have to make money to survive. They see that, you know, clearly that things are changing, so they have to, you know, make adjustments as necessary. I mean, I was part of a layoff of 2,000 people around the country in one day for Clear Channel.
Oh, wow.
Clear Channel didn't have a problem with me.
Right.
Clear Channel, you know, but everybody got severances, and, you know, so it is what it is. Of course, I would have rather have kept my job, but I got a Zenimus severance, too, and Clear Channel always treated me right in that sense, so, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah, business is business, mm-hmm. basically what it is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, okay. Yeah.
Would you mind discussing or describing a little bit some of your current projects, what you're doing currently?
Sure. I'm actually working, like I said, with No Malice,
yeah.
Of the Clips. I'm also working with a producer and artist by the name of Cocaine Ray. He's done projects with Joe Budden and Sierra Marie, and he's working on a project with DJ Drama currently.
Okay.
I also was working with a comedian named Thelonious Monk.
Oh, yeah.
And his videographer.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're recounting my Twitter feed from all these folks.
I didn't even know that you knew who he was. Yeah, he's in Chicago currently, but his videographer, who shot all of his Stop the Bee videos, is now working with Pusha T, and he's also doing a lot of stuff with Def Jam as well, and he also works with a well-known fashion designer named Randy Rom, and his name is Samuel Rogers. And so those are two people that I worked with closely for a while, and they've both just totally blossomed onto another level.
Mm-hmm.
And I also work with a group of DJs out of Florida and here called Future Star and CRC DJs, who have helped break records and careers for some people like Katie Michelle and different people in Florida, and worked with, you know, some of the more popular rappers for the most part who are still, you know, developing their careers.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
They have like a large DJ pool. And they do media panels, music panels, and
mm-hmm.
Other events as well related to the music community.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I work with, you know, different people in different areas of entertainment, but most of the time it always leads back to music.
Right.
Because that's really where, you know, my passion lies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and it sounds like, too, I mean, even though you're, you know, Thelonious Monk is a stand-up comedian, I mean, it still sounds that it's coming from a place of hip-hop community and culture.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I guess because that's what I've always been used to. I mean, you know, and there's people, they're just so respectful. They give me so much respect. And anytime I go anywhere, people come to me and say, "Hey, aren't you Rachel Fawn? Girl, I've been wanting to meet you." And it's so funny because I'm just like everybody else. I don't think there's anything that special. So it's always, you know, the first time somebody did that to me was in the club when I was working a club gig with the station. And I was like, I can't believe this guy came up to me and knew who I was. And, you know, it kind of went from there. It's just so funny to go places and have mm-hmm. people come up to me and say, you know, I really appreciate, you know, what you say. I've heard your interviews, or, you know, I've read your blogs and, you know, seen your emails. And it's just great to know that people remember that and they wait for the opportunity to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
I guess awesome to me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, let you know that you're making a difference in
yeah,
the region, in the community, you know?
Yeah, it definitely makes you feel good, and it kind of reiterates, you know, why you do what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, obviously, it is frustrating. It's not all peaches and cream. We all know that. We can try to portray that picture, but it's clearly not.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm curious in terms of, you know, the your clients and the folks that you work with, like, how are you able to get the, you know, the product or the art out to people? Like, how are you able to get it to get it out to an audience?
Developing good media relationships, referring to the different blogs and web scenes and, you know, like the DJs and, the different database of people that I've developed over the years. Yeah.
You know, and I'm curious about this. I mean, you know, everybody likes to talk about how revolutionary social media is and things like that. I mean, is it truly that revolutionary, or is it still doing the same sort of things, but now you just have more platforms?
Well, a little bit of both. I mean, I've definitely developed a lot of good relationships and conducted business via Twitter and Facebook. I mean, I literally met Thelonious Monk on Twitter.
Okay.
You know, and I was told that he was, like, this really funny comedian. I needed to check him out. I hired him for a gig. for a comedy show, met him, we hit it off instantly. A few months later, he asked me if I would be his publicist, and it just kind of went from there. Mm-hmm. And now I've worked with other people from around the country now because of social media. So
yes,
I don't
and
know.
No. Okay.
I've definitely seen a lot of benefits to it if you use it correctly. If you're not just up there, you know, thumbing around, being nosy, and, you know, actually working, then, hey, it's definitely mm-hmm. beneficial.
Okay, so how do you view yourself in terms of sort of in terms of hip-hop culture and history within Virginia?
I mean, that's always a hard, you know, it's kind of, you know, hard question to answer when you're talking about yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like I've contributed. I mean, people know who I am, and people still come to me for, you know, interviews and articles and, you know, different things like that. So, I mean, I feel like I've played a role from the advising standpoint and, you know, helping people promote what they do.
So, you know, in the last, well, I guess, you know, we could even take it back a little bit longer to, you know, 17, 18, but especially in terms of your professional career, how has hip-hop culture and art changed in Virginia?
I think that people, I usually try to take the positive approach, so some people might disagree with me, but I do think that people are finally starting to see that the Virginia market is a viable market, and we have produced, obviously, some of the most talented producers and artists in the world, not just in the country or in the state, but in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And people are really starting to pay attention more and more. And I would love for Virginia to be like a hub, a music, you know, entertainment hub that generates income.
Mm-hmm.
For our area.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, build, like, a huge entertainment complex that's not just a concert hall, but actually has, like, a record label and offices. And, you know, myself and Samandy and Miss Blends and even, you know, Shaggy and DJ Law and all of us have kicked that idea around. And I think that we'll all be able to come together and make it happen at some point. I mean, obviously, mine is, you know, DJ Law, but in his memory, like, that's something we've all talked about.
Right.
And I think that it eventually can happen. So I think that you still have your people that have their gripes and complaints and say that, you know, it's crap and a, you know, barrel mentality and people don't care, people leave and this and that, or whatever, but that's just negativity. You know, you can't get anything accomplished if you just sit around and complain all the time. You know, you have to be able to find the positive in the situation and say, well, how can I make this work?
You know, I've never actually asked this anyone before, but in this sort of way. But I'm curious if you're able to just sort of lay out the history of hip hop in Virginia that you know.
I'm probably not a girl. I'd hate to be the one to answer that one and represent it wrong. I know that. I mean, you know, I just know that the Buddha Brothers really initiated a lot. Obviously, I go back to them always, but they initiated a lot. And you have your people like the Bornettes and, you know, like, oh my gosh. Like, see, I don't know the other areas
Virginia. Okay. Yeah, that's
so,
okay.
Yeah, the Bornettes and the Sick Mikes and the, gosh, who else am I missing? I know I'm missing people. I hate to do that. Double XL, he's come a long way. And then, you know, DJ Kareem, who is on 103 Jams, his father was a really well-known DJ called DJ Quasar, I believe. He did a lot years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, helped pave the way for his son. He was a phenomenal DJ. That's a good question, and I do not want to be the one.
No. Yeah, I didn't mean to put you on the spot like that.
I do not want to, you know, I know I leave people out, and I do not want to do that, because that's a good, loaded question.
Yeah, no, but, I mean, you definitely hit a lot of the main folks, especially, you know, Hampton Roads, Newport News area, you know, so. And, of course, and, you know, their name, and and they're the names that come up, you know, through all the other folks are hitting them too. So don't worry about that, you know. Between the archive, we're piecing it together.
Sure, yeah, that's what I figured. But I always want to give credit where credit is due. I'm definitely big about that, you know. So
sort of with that in mind, I mean, you mentioned picking up a Buddha Brothers DJ Law mixtape from DJs, but what other record stores were there back when record stores existed?
Oh my gosh. I can't even think of some of this. That's terrible. Mm-hmm. There was still one in up in Denby. I can't think of the name. I'm definitely drawing a blank. DJs was like the main one. Like, that was like hot. You know, they had one in Norfolk. They had one in Fort Smith. I don't know if they had one on the peninsula, but that was like the main one that I remember. I can't think of any. There were more, definitely more, obviously, a lot more than that. But that's all I'm thinking of right now, and I can't think of the one in Denby.
Okay.
I can't think of the name of it, so I apologize.
No worries. So sort of in concert with that, but what were some of the you know, different clubs and venues that you went to, that you had events at, but also you knew that events were going on at?
Let's see, there was Infinity's, there's always been the Alley, the ever-transforming Alley. The Alley was always a spot. There's a place called Crabbers, Royal Blue, there was a place our James used to call Club 121, which is now, you know, it's not in existence anymore. Picasso's, which is now called Bentley's. Places at the beach, there used to be a club called Lagoon. Oh my gosh, so many different places. Shadows was a really big deal. That was right off Newtown Road. So places like that. Waterside and all those different places too.
Okay. Now, was it, you know, in terms of actually putting on or, you know, promoting or organizing a show, how difficult or easy was that to do?
I would say difficult in learning, but once you learn it, it's easy. And if it's something you like to do, it's great. It's definitely time-consuming. I mean, you know, it's basically putting together your wish list of artists, creating a budget, seeing, you know, what works, putting together the venue list, if there is more than one or whatever it may be. You know, narrowing it down to what obviously is reasonable, what will work, possibly securing sponsors, definitely radio, you know, possibly TV commercials, if it makes sense, and promoting it and just go. Right. You know, obviously, clearly you want to pick artists that you think will be a good sell. And then all the main work is the promoting of it. And then the night of, it's there, everything's in place, hopefully it goes well if you have it all lined up right, and you have the right people in place, and you have a concert, and you're done. Now, clearly, that's, you know, many years of doing it, and again, you know, working for somebody who is such a seasoned professional. I mean, she was outstanding. I mean, she was no joking, let's get it done, we've got work to do,
right,
and, you know, without her, a lot of people wouldn't be successful today, so.
Okay, so, also, sort of going off that, but also, we mentioned that 94 Jams Fest that you went to, but would you mind walking me through some of the other sort of big events that that have gone on in terms of Virginia hip hop?
You had your car shows, Crank Up the Jam, or the car show / performers / females.
Right.
Abu Fest. Sick Mike has a winter peace rally, an annual peace rally in Newport News. Different DJ battles that have been held, not necessarily annual, but significant. I hate to say a lot, but sitting here trying to, I'm thinking out loud. I'm sure I'm missing something. You got now Shaggy from Z104 has music expos and Shag Fest, which has turned into a big venture for him. And BJB has Fresh Fest every year. And I think those are some of the bigger events.
So is there a sound or particular style of Virginia hip hop that's unique to Virginia?
The Neptunes. I mean, the Neptunes beats the Lex Lugers. Lex Luger being a newer, rising producer with a lot of credits. It's just a blend of things too, because people have been in Virginia, but they have other, you know, places mixed in. And I can't say that I would hear a track and know for sure.
Right.
I think that's one of the things that people have had a hard time with, is finding that distinctive sound that says, oh yeah, that's Virginia. Besides your, the Neptunes, the Clips, the Timberlands, the Missies, you know, the Lex Lugers and people like that.
Right.
But like you're pretty confident knowing when you hear something from New York or say Philly or, you know, Atlanta or whatever, and that's all part of us all coming together and creating this as a hub, a go-to spot.
Right.
And defining who we are.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely, you know, the response that most people, you know, they say that.
Yeah, a conversation we've had a few times.
So, okay. So, now I kind of want to switch gears to the final part of... And this is more just thinking about hip-hop generally and how it has impacted your life, you know? So to start with, you know, straight up, it's just, how has hip-hop impacted your life?
It's helped me to understand people more and develop better relationships, I think, as a business person, being that I've been involved in it for so long, and helped me understand where people are coming from by telling their story and not judging people. I grew up with a mother who taught me to treat everybody on an individual basis, you know, based on how they presented themselves to me. But I think it's helped me to see the passion in people and see the importance of music more. And how it positively affects people. And you have all these legislators who want to cut funding for arts, and, you know, and that is encompassed in that. Music and hip-hop and every level is encompassed in that when you're talking about cutting funding. I don't understand it. But, yeah, it's just helped me see the passion that they have so much more, and for somebody to just be able to get on the microphone and just off the top of their head, you know, freestyle. It's just so impressive to me to watch DJs create art with their, you know, records and music. Real DJs that knew how to carry crates and dig into crates, literally, not just these computer-generated DJs.
Right.
To see them create masterpieces on the turntables, it's just so, you know, awesome to me. I always love watching DJs. I think it's an incredible art that is not respected enough.
Okay, so what do you think is hip-hop's impact on American culture?
I think it has helped people embrace the urban community more. and see the many talents in different areas. It doesn't have to just be a singer or a rock star or, you know, a country singer or a musician. Hip-hop can actually be a positive form of music that tells anybody's story and brings people together mm-hmm. in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Helping people see, like, hey, maybe this isn't bad after all. Like, this is a different way of telling a story
mm-hmm.
and bringing people together.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now thinking like looking forward, like 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years down the line, where do you think hip-hop's place will be in your life?
I still think it will be an active picture for me, you know. I see it in my picture, obviously. I hope to have affected artists, continue to affect artists in a positive way to educate them and help them develop their craft.
Mm-hmm.
And continue to work with them and just build my brand while I'm building their brand.
Right, right. Okay, so in terms of my little cheat sheet that I like to work through while we talk, I mean, I hit everything. However, is there anything that I didn't ask that I should have, or that...
No, yeah, some great questions. I mean, they were really good.
Okay, and is there anything that you'd like to add?
Not off the top of my head. I think that was a pretty good conversation.
Okay.
I'm really glad that, you know, you included me in that. I definitely look forward to the project coming together. I know you're probably excited about the whole endeavor.
Yeah.
As a whole, so I think it's awesome. I think it's great to give people that platform
mm-hmm.
and to pay tribute to, you know, Virginia and the music community. I think it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, Rachel, so this was just great talking to you. I'm really glad that, you know, you were willing to answer some of my questions, do a little oral history with me, so...
Oh, sure, definitely.
So...
I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.